advised.
Spoiler alert episode. Spoiler.
Please be advised. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Hello, everybody. Spoiler Ep 26, The Imitation Game, is ready.
A lot of spoiler eps going on.
Banging it out, buddy. We're getting some good spoiler epage.
You know what? These are good movies to spoiler ep. There's a lot to talk about in these films.
Yeah, and I think it's cool that we're...
Especially endings.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you know, it's Oscar season, so we're trying to do some Oscar movies. And we started out doing the spoiler eps in the summer just with the big blockbusters, but, you know, I think any movie that's getting a lot of traction... Yeah. Should be spoiled. Mm-hmm. So for those of you new to this, we're going to talk about the Imitation Game front to back, including the ending. So if you have not listened to it and you don't want any of that ruined, shut this down and stop being so stupid.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you done that?
Hello, talking to you. Shut it down.
All right, good. Okay, now we can continue.
Yeah. Maybe you can't figure out how to not be stupid.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just too hard for you to shut down.
It would be stupid if that stupid person kept listening.
Yeah,
right, and then, now I'm like, oh, I don't think they're talking to me.
Yeah, and then that would be the one that would send us an angry email.
Yeah,
you guys spoiled the ending of the Imitation Game on the spoiler app. Oh, well, you're dumb.
Yeah. What about that first 5 minutes when we were saying, if you haven't seen it, that we're going to spoil it?
Oh, I didn't hear that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I was doing something else.
I was counting my toes.
I only have 9 of them, which is your fault too.
Yeah.
Which, you know what? Cut off one of your toes. I think you're pretty dumb.
And all send it to P.O. Box.
Do not repeat. Do not send us the toe. You want to cut your own goddamn toe off like some kind of weird hillbilly yakuza?
Yeah, keep it.
Let's keep it. Yeah. Don't send it to us. I don't need your fucking toes. Jesus Christ. Send it to the Podfest P.O. Box.
Send it to Mark Maron.
Let his cat eat it.
Yeah. Just as a full disclaimer, please don't cut off anything and send it to anyone. I think we need to say that right now. I think, you know, this goes out all over the world. You never know who's listening.
A lot of you guys are weirdos.
There's somebody that just went, oh,
like they were literally sharpening.
Yeah, they were getting close. Yeah.
They put their toes up on a block and were like, oh, okay.
All right.
They were for real. I'd do anything these guys told me to do.
So I'm really excited to talk about this movie. But you know what else I'm excited to talk about?
What?
Vegas.com.
Yeah.
This is actually our last go-around with Vegas.com. Okay. So we're really excited about this new sponsor, mainly because it'll give you 10% off right now to Graham's show coming
up. Yes, February 17th through the 22nd. I am headlining my first ever time headlining in Vegas at the Improv Inside Harrah's. So if you use coupon code CFN, come to Vegas, and you can save 10% on the ticket price.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a cool show. Gary Brightwell was a very funny comic. He opens for Bill Engvall a lot.
Yeah, he's great.
He's been on this show like 4 or 5 years ago. He has a show that he co-hosts with Bill and sometimes Murray Valeriano on XM Sirius Satellite Radio. So use coupon code CFN at Vegas.com and save 10% off of that. Also, we want to talk about some of the cool things because Chris and I have worked in Vegas a million times.
Yeah, and the great thing about this site is it's like an insider's guide to Las Vegas. It's people that work there, live there, and they know where to go, where not to go, and where the best deals are.
It's like having a guy.
Yeah, so you got a guy.
I got a guy in Vegas. A digital guy. So, you know, I know we've talked about in the past, there's all the cool shows you can go to, which are great. The Cirque du Soleil and the Caesar's Buffet, and we've talked about the museums.
That Caesar Buffet, Jesus. I went there by accident. I'm like, oh, this is how rich people eat every day. That's how when you go there, and it's like, oh my God, there's like a chef at every station. It's the best buffet I've ever been to.
As well it should be.
And after, it's like, you know, that's the kind of thing where, well, now I can't go to any other buffet. This buffet has ruined me for all other buffets. Right.
But here's some other cool stuff that they have on Vegas.com. A thing I have done is gone to Hoover Dam. And the Hoover Dam tours, again, you can
see. In a barrel.
In a barrel. Yeah, I did it in a barrel. Hoover Dam is an amazing thing to do for several reasons. If you're in Vegas for several days, it's cool to kind of get off the strip and see what else is out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff. There's Red Rock Canyon, but Hoover Dam is a really cool place to visit.
And I've gone there, and take one of the tours, because to learn about the history of it, and also the, you know, Hoover created it, and then when FDR got elected, you know, there was a fight. They didn't want to call it the Hoover Dam and all the politics of that, because, you know, Hoover apparently, you know, they hung the Depression around Hoover's neck, basically. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. That's for a historian to decide. But it's interesting. And then just from the engineering standpoint of how this dam was created back then, you know, and it was really fascinating. It was a really cool tour. And it's the first and I think probably only dam I personally have ever been inside of. You get to go way down in it. That's cool.
Yes.
That's a cool thing to do. So if you go to Vegas,
you get to see the whole dam.
Yeah.
You really do.
It's amazing. And the history behind it, how it works. And, you know, I always thought it was designed for, you know, to generate electricity. That's just like a bonus. It's really about water control. You know, that's why they set this dam up and everything. It was fascinating. So I would go to Vegas.com.
So hopefully when the robots take over, you know, the dam will not be the first to go.
No.
It's like, well, we have all your water, humans. Good luck.
Good luck, suckers. So, yeah, Vegas.com, you guys, coupon code CFN.
Now, and it's the control, like you said, like the flow of the water, right?
It's all that. It's the flow of the water. It's, you know, to control the levels of the, because basically, obviously, when you create a dam, then a whole lake is created next to it. And
so go on the tour and find out the ending of the why the Hoover Dam was created.
Exactly. We don't want to spoiler that for you. So go on the Hoover Dam tour.
By the way, I wanted to make sure the code CFN not only gets you 10% off Graham's show, it gets you 10% off everything except air and hotel packages. Mm-hmm. So you can actually get the 10% off using CFN code on the Hoover Dam tours.
Yep. It's a cool thing. So
use it.
Use it.
Damn work it.
Hashtag damn work it. All right. Imitation game.
The first thing I want to say about this movie, and obviously from the trailer and the history, you kind of know how it's going to end. There wouldn't be a movie about a guy who didn't crack the Enigma code. It really, you know going in what's going to happen.
It's about Alan Turing, the actual World War II, the British mathematician, who tries to crack the Enigma code with a bunch of other fellow mathematicians.
But one of the things that did strike me is how sad it was at the end, and the way that homosexuality was criminalized. And here's a guy who literally saved millions of lives, and the way he was treated towards the end of his life was just criminal.
It's criminal because it was like, basically it was, the law was, it's illegal to be gay in England in the 40s. Mm-hmm. And so he had to keep that hidden. And then after the war now, so, you know, we won the war with a lot of help from him.
Yeah, maybe a little credit.
Yeah. And nope, he's treated like a criminal. And
he has to go on chemical castration or prison time.
That's what they do, chemical castration or prison, because, you know, back then homosexuality was a sickness, you know, that you had to fix. And it was just, it's amazing, because I remember we had Kevin Avery on the show, and he had just seen it. And he kind of had talked about, neither one of us had seen it at that point. He talked about, it's kind of two different movies. And he was like, wasn't sure thematically if that's like, wow, was that weird? And so I kind of was wondering how they were going to handle this going in.
Yes.
And I realized you had to. And it's some of the complaints we had with some other movies.
It's a big part of his story. This is a biopic.
Yes.
It's a big part of his story. To ignore that or leave it out or put a card up at the end would have done it disservice.
Well, I want to address that real quick. Yeah. That's a fair question, because we both were critical of American Sniper. Again, we're going to do a quick American Sniper spoiler. So if you haven't seen it, pause and fast forward one of your toes. Pause one of your toes, fast forward it. So Chris Kyle, in real life, in 2 years ago, February of 2013, was killed by a Marine because he was taking part of how Chris Kyle was dealing with his PTSD.
Oh, also, by the way, a fan pointed that out. It wasn't just Chris Kyle. There were two servicemen that were killed.
Mm-hmm. So we got an email actually from Aaron, our intern, which was, this is great. So we need to sort of clarify this, which will explain the card that just came up at the end. And we were both sort of mystified. Like, you don't go into the fact that Chris Kyle was helping guys with PTSD by taking them to a rifle range, and then a Marine killed him and two people, and it was just sort of dealt with a card, and that was it. The Marine is either about to go on trial, or the trial has just begun. So it stands to reason that Clint Eastwood went, I can't, probably legally, I'm sure the legal department said, nope, don't mention this. You can't bring up any of this at all. What actually happened? So we got to just leave that alone. Hearing that makes a lot more sense to me as to why American Sniper just sort of ended that way.
Uh-huh. That's a good theory, and it might be true.
We don't know for sure.
We don't know for sure. Or it could have just been a creative decision on Clint Eastwood's part.
But, yeah, knowing lawyers, though.
Well, yeah, of course. It's a big studio film with a team of lawyers. Who knows?
And lawyers are always like, don't risk it. Don't risk it. Everyone's going to sue you, you know. So that makes more sense to me, and it puts me a little more at ease with regard to that film. So now let's go to Imitation Game. Because we're 70 years removed from his life story, you had to tell this. You had to tell this second half of his life after the war, because he ends up killing himself.
Yes, absolutely.
And it is so relevant. It also helps explain.
It also bookended the entire film. We start with the interrogation in the police department,
right?
And then we are like, "Oh, what's going on?" And mm-hmm. then we see the story, and then that's also where, you know, we end up after the
right.
war.
And which is a great way to start the movie. The cop is asking questions, and he basically just says, "You know, I'm smarter than you, right?"
Right.
You know, just, yeah. and then the way that only Benny Cumbo can
yeah.
is just say, "I'm smarter than you, and I know what you're thinking before you think it
right.
in your little brain." Mm-hmm. But the other thing too, his homosexuality at that period in time in England, where he had to keep it so hidden, it also helps explain, and they do some cool flashback stuff, of why he is so hard to deal with, because he had to basically take this part of himself and say, nope, hide it, because I've been told it's dirty and wrong and it's illegal. And I'm, in addition to being a genius, then it also makes me feel like even more of an outsider, outcast, weirdo, who's going to just be like, you know, he has no social skills at all. None.
Yeah. You go back to his, Sherlock character is like, with he described himself as like a high functioning sociopath or
right.
something like that, and you know, you could say anything from that, or you could like, this character is like a you know, somebody with Asperger's, high functioning Asperger. There's many different terms you could use, but that's one of the things that you also see, like in A Beautiful Mind. It's like mm-hmm. okay, you've got this genius mathematician, but there's also something broken in
sure.
their mind as well. So clearly, they go hand in hand often.
Yeah, you know? They do it. And I think it, you know, it also, to me, and what the actual Alan Turing was like during that time,
right.
you know, who knows, but
it had to be tough for him too, just as an actor, thinking, okay, well, I can't go too far Sherlock-y, because there are some similar traits to each character, mm-hmm. because that's an easy criticism to make. Oh, he's too Sherlock-y in the movie. And I'm sure he was very aware of that on the set as he was playing Alan Turing.
And that's the thing that is the sign of a truly skilled actor, is because it is hard when you've already done a big iconic character in a big movie.
Yes.
Everyone's going to be like, oh, he's just doing a cheap version of
yeah,
that last
exactly.
thing. Like,
this is a Sherlock knockoff.
I remember seeing an interview with...
this is Sherlock Leave It.
I'm blanking on his name. The other guy that Tom Cruise played with in Rain Man.
Dustin Hoffman?
Yes, Dustin Hoffman.
That guy.
That little character actor who hasn't been in much. I'm surprised I forgot his name. Dustin Hoffman, when he was getting ready to... when he was rehearsing, basically, for Rain Man, he was like... I hadn't quite cracked the code yet in the rehearsals because I felt like I was just doing a cheap knockoff of Ratso Rizzo from Midnight Cowboy.
Yes, of course.
Uh-huh. And it was like, wow. And he, of course, is even though that was 10, 15 years removed from one another.
He was cognizant of it.
Cognizant because that was such a defining moment in his career,
right,
and a defining moment in cinema that he's like, I can't just do that again. Which is clearly a conversation that was not had going into Mordecai. So,
well, the conversation may have happened.
It's just over cocktails on a yacht talking about how great the Lone Ranger was.
Yeah.
So clearly, and that's why.
And now I'm going to murder you.
Oh, God. Boo. Boo. So that's why, though, Benedict
and
Cumberbatch.
And then make Lone Ranger 2.
Oh, God. If that fucking happens. But that's, to me, like Benedict Cumberbatch goes into this with such an approach and such a... Clearly, there's a lot of research that was done. There's a lot of reverence to this man. And it made for an amazing... It made for an amazing movie. One of my favorite scenes is they crack the code.
Yes.
And then they have to go, wait a minute. They all... Alan Turing and Matthew Goad, who plays Hugh Alexander, who's another really solid actor. They both, Turing and Matthew Goad's character, have the same realization at the same time of, oh, wait a minute.
If we stop these attacks, the Nazis will know that we cracked their code, and then they'll just start over.
And one of the younger guys is like, hey, man,
My
brother's on that boat. And he's like, who do you think you are, God? And they're all wrestling with this. And they all I mean, it's like that is the right decision to make. We, in the long term, greater good, we have to sit on this. And I was just like.
And how do you decide, too? Like, and they said the real hard work begins. How do you decide which attacks to let through and which ones to stop? How do you use this information just enough that
right.
the Nazis don't know that you cracked the code? Now, this actually leads me to an anecdote as I visited Pearl Harbor a number of years ago, and they go through the tour. They show you a very depressing film with real footage and what happened. And as you go through the official story of what happened to you, but then also the tour guides kind of give you some like unofficial rumors and speculations and what may or may not have happened.
Yeah, did
as well,
FDR know?
That, exactly. And they went into that, and it was very interesting. They said because... they sent the aircraft carriers out on maneuvers because they were but instrumental in winning the war. If they sank, it would have been a lot harder to actually get the Navy back up and running to attack Japan. So when that attack happened, they were away from Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, and all the major command was pulled.
Yes. So you wonder, like, what did FDR know? Was this part of it? Like, well, we kind of let it happen, but these assets weren't necessarily there at that time.
That's such a great thing because that fascinates me, that particular thing in history about FDR knowing, because FDR, America didn't want to get involved in World War
II. And where do you think if the code was cracked and we knew it was coming, where do you think the information came from?
Right.
It was the cracked Enigma code.
Right.
Britain let us know.
Yep. And so it's like...
Now, again, this is speculation.
It's all speculation.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is great sort of what if history,
yes,
uh-huh. you know, conversation, which I really enjoy. So, but this film, though, and then the relationship with Keira Knightley, she's really good. And
yeah, like I said before, like the other episode, you forget that she's actually a good actress. And this happens sometimes. These good actors and actresses get pulled into these giant Hollywood blockbusters, and you forget what got them there in the first place until they do movies like this. And it's also part on the actor, too. You have to seek these roles out. They don't always come to you, especially after you've done a bunch of Pirates of the Caribbean movies. You know, you got to take charge of your career and look for these.
And it was so interesting because... There was some cool stuff in there of he needed her on the team, but, you know, she was like, I can't come and just, what am I going to, you know, very proper English family.
Yes.
She should be getting married at this point in her life.
The parents would not let her go.
Would not have let her go. And so he's like, well, I got to create a job for you to work here. So you're going to work in the secretary pool or whatever that thing he kind of concocted. And then
she had a cover on a cover. Of a job.
Yeah. And then when she was like starting to fall for him and he's like, well, I'm gay. And then she was like, well, that's okay. like our relationship is,
we'll work it out.
He was just like, that was such a great scene where he was just like, huh?
And then he rejected her anyway.
Yeah.
And that's, it goes into, like to me, that was a really believable scene, because you have someone here who's a genius, but he literally lacks, like you said, any kind of social skills. He would not know how to react in a situation like that. He doesn't understand emotion. He doesn't understand how other people would react or anything like that. The only thing he seemed to understand, and he did it multiple times, is like why human beings like violence. Because, and what was the reason? Because it was, he was being violently bullied through most of his life. Mm-hmm. So that's the part of human emotion that he understood.
Right.
But having a tender conversation with your fiance about never having sex with her.
Because you're gay.
There's no way he could have navigated that conversation. No way,
because
ever.
He doesn't even really know he's gay. Or knows he is, but hasn't dealt with that emotion because he's been told it's wrong in society. Mm-hmm. And just from an acting standpoint, how Benny Cumbo deals with that is so, he's such an amazing actor, and his scenes, there's all these slight emotions and ways that he deals with it that convey the emotion. Like, so we, the audience, know this guy is emotionally crippled and doesn't have social skills, but he's a genius.
Right.
And the actor knows this. Mm-hmm. But how do you then, you're the actor, you know this, that your character doesn't know their own emotions. So how do you convey that? And he does it, which is amazing to me.
It's a multi-layered cake.
It's
multi-layered acting cake.
It really is. It's a really nice slab of acting cake that he serves up at this cinematic reception. Huh? You guys like that metaphor? Eat it. And then there's this people like Charles Dance who, you know, the golden child, Sardam Nimsi is the golden child. He is just the classic.
Well, his big thing now is Game of Thrones.
Right.
Yeah.
He's just the, if you want an English bad guy.
Right. You go to him.
Chuck Dance.
Yeah.
Chucky D is your guy to be a Brit bad guy.
Charlie Dance.
I think he goes by Chuck D.
Yeah.
I think they call him Chuck D. I think he inspired Public Enemy, quite honestly. Look it up. This is all fact. He wrote Burn Hollywood Burn, if I'm not mistaken. But no, he's just great as the English.
A dance always pays his debts.
That's what he says every day. But no, he's great as the English officer who, it's wartime. There's and he makes great points. This is the so thing, like you see where his character, he isn't just sort of the stereotypical, the bad guy that comes in and I'm going to shut it down.
Yeah.
He makes a good point. He goes, you know, cause he was an officer and he's like, how much experience do you have leading men during war? I do. Cause I was in World War I, motherfucker. Right. Like he's like, and that is, and when you, as an audience, I mean, you know, going into the film without, I mean, you know Alan Turing creates this thing.
And you know he's going to be right.
You know he's going to be right. You know we're going to win the war. Right. You know we defeat the Nazis. But
the journey there is really what's so much fun in this film.
And this is what makes a good filmmaker is when Charles Dance's character says that, I go, he's got a good point.
Yeah,
you know, like, right. You know, and I'm not just like, oh, shut up, you two-dimensional bad guy. And so there's all these... The director, by the way, is Morten Tidlam, who has done Headhunters, Fallen Angels, Buddy. These are not amazing movies. You know, Headhunters, a lot of smaller films. Like this is
first real big one.
This is his first real big one, and man, out of the
game. Well, yeah, he hit it out of the park.
It's really solid. Like these are all.
What I love too is the just. How unlikely that this all came about. That was like, you've got geniuses that are working on breaking a code, you know, the traditional way. And he comes along and says, well, there's no way a human being can break this code. I have to build a machine to break it.
Right.
And, you know, if someone said that to you, you're like, okay, well, why don't you just go play in the sandbox and let the adults work? You know, and that was like that was the reaction. Like, well, that's just, you're out of your mind. You know, there's no way you could even build this machine. There's no way that it would work. But sure enough, through sheer force of will, he got the funding to do it. he was able to do it.
And the great thing, and again, this is another great supporting actor, Mark Strong, who's one of these guys I just always like.
Yeah, yeah, he's good.
He's just a good character actor. He plays the MI6 guy that pushes this through.
There's a great line. It says, there's only five branches of government. And he goes, that's the spirit.
Yes, yes, yes. There's all this great English pithy sarcasm. Yeah. That's the spirit. And he's great because he's like, Alan Turing's my guy.
Right.
I know he's a pain in the ass. I don't give a shit. And I have to navigate the chessboard of internal British command politics, which is always so fascinating, you know, and these generals and political leaders are, you know, it's a lot of ego and my unit's going to do it and not yours and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And he has to sort of navigate that. And as a sort of special op secret agent type, knowing the like, well, I got to get it done by any means possible. And if that means setting a kid on fire, then that's what I'm going to have, you know, like that's what we're doing, you know, and I'll sell it, you know?
Yeah.
And there's just great scenes in there. Well, this is the other thing too. There's a guy selling secrets to the Russians.
Yes.
And who is the person becomes a big, and that's a cool little subplot
right.
in the story. And when they find out who the guy is, Mark Strong's character is like, yeah, I knew all along.
Of course. That's why I put him there.
Yeah, I put him there. We need to communicate to the Russians because Churchill won't. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, wow. Like that is one of those.
That's one of those things I believe too. Actually happened.
Of course I do. Because it, you know, having studied a lot about that and all of the men involved in that era were these big ego dudes, Patton, Montgomery, MacArthur. Like these were not like, okay, I'm just a team. These were like big ego Churchill. I read a larger than life characters. If you think about that era in history, these were people. I mean, this is like Winston Churchill, FDR, Stalin,
Even Eisenhower.
Eisenhower, you know, and then the generals like Montgomery, mm-hmm. Patton, MacArthur.
Even on the other side, Rommel.
Rommel. Yeah. I mean, these were just like amazing.
You also had like, even like machinery, like you had like the Bismarck. You've got like this legendary giant battleship. I mean, it if you don't know the history, if somebody just came in and knew none of the history, it would sound like we're making up like a story.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic. It sounds like crazy superheroes. And I read a great document or a great biography about Churchill. Let me recommend this. If you're ever in London, go to I think it's the Churchill Museum. That's underneath 10 Downing Street or near 10 Downing Street where the bunker was. So when Germany is bombing England every day, Churchill would have his cabinet meetings down there. And if they show you the little room he slept in every day, Churchill would take a 30-minute siesta.
Oh, really?
30-minute nap, smoke his cigars, and he'd talk to his guys. And it was in that museum where I picked up this documentary. I'm sorry, I keep saying documentary, this novel, this biography about Churchill. And, you know, he was sort of waiting for this moment in history. And when it came, he was like, yep.
I'm ready.
I'm ready. Let's do this.
And Britain got, you know, they got bombed horribly, horribly bombed. And it was getting to the point, too, where, like, you know, I don't know how much longer, you know, they could hold on.
I mean, if we didn't get involved, it was
if we didn't get involved, it would have gone really poorly.
It was over, and it was like
for Europe,
you know, and that goes back to that whole kind of.
That's not ego, by the way. That's
like, my country's going to die.
Yeah, that's
Hitler is going to win. So all that, knowing that history, as you watch this film,
it just nuances it.
Oh, it makes it so great, and you think about. You know, obviously it's like World War II. We've been watching movies on this for 50 years. Like how much more new ground can you cover? This is new ground.
This definitely.
Is such new ground.
Well, this was, it wasn't even public knowledge for many years.
Well, they had to keep
it hidden. Something like 50 years or 50 something?
50 years they kept it hidden. They kept it secret. And, you know, they called these Turing machines, which are now called computers.
Yeah.
So he helped invent computers.
Yes.
And, you know, this film...
You never hear Bill Gates or Steve Jobs never talked about Alan Turing.
Nope. That's the spirit.
Yeah.
But like, to me, this film is worth watching because,
you know, come to think of it too, when you hear about like UNIVAC and stuff and uh-huh. all, you know, you never really hear about the machine that, you know, decoded Enigma as the basically the grandfather machine of mm-hmm. all of these.
And I'm sure it had a lot to do with the fact that they kept it secret for so long. Mm-hmm. But it's a...
I wonder if they really did destroy it. Like in the movie, they said, burn everything. All the machinery, all of the notes, all of the records.
There's no way. The government had a machine that powerful and then said, oh no, we got to get rid of this.
Do you think the Ark of the Covenant?
I think it's still functioning today. I think it's
in a warehouse somewhere.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere underneath Buckingham Palace and you can, you know, it still talks to satellites or whatever. It's probably got a mind of its own now. They probably put Turing's brain in there and connected to it. But yeah, that kind of stuff. It's fascinating because it's a wonderful, it's just great acting. It's really good directing.
I just thought of the Turing machine like running the BBC.
Yeah.
And I was like, green light Sherlock. That's how Benny Cumberbo got the job because the machine was doing the casting.
Yeah, they hired him because they did an algorithm and he would be the best actor for it. This is all verifiable, guys. Yeah, there's been a lot of hard science on this show today. I think it's a great film. It deserves all the nominations it gets. Mm-hmm. And it's a story worth, if you didn't know much about it, it's worth watching. So
definitely check it out. And it is, I will say it's unexpectedly poignant and sad at the end. Like I actually didn't know the whole story of Alan Turing. So it kind of caught me off guard a little bit. I didn't know that he killed himself going in. So it was definitely, you know, really one of those movies that makes you go through all those emotions. It was funny. It was heartfelt and it was also tragic. It was a great film. I really liked it. And it was another movie that, too, I would probably like to enjoy again on DVD. I'll watch it again.
It's definitely one of those movies when it pops up again on cable or if I'm on a flight or something, I'll watch it again. Because it's dealing with all of this really, you know, highly intellectual math and stuff...
And it could have been dry too, but it wasn't. No. It was fun. It had some great British humor.
Yeah.
I'm sure we missed some of the British humor, but I think we got most of it, and it was really fun.
And it's all these solid actors. So, you know, I would check it out. All right.
That's great. No, go check it out if you haven't.
Check it
already.
Out, and then go to vegas.com and use coupon code CFN.
Do it.
So, tour dates, as I said, I'll be headlining the Improv in Las Vegas February 17 through 20. I'm doing the Brea Improv with Murray Valeriano and other surfing comedians on February 11th and headlining the Hollywood Improv on Saturday, February 14th, Valentine's Day, 8 o'clock show. Really solid show. Helen Hong is emceeing. We've got David Huntsberger, who writes for the site, Baron Vaughn, who's been on the show, and Lori Kilmartin, who writes for Conan. She's really, this is a great show. So if you are in Los Angeles and want to come celebrate Valentine's Day with me and a bunch of funny people at the Hollywood Improv, come out. Christopher, you got some dates.
Yes, I will be in Lake Tahoe over Valentine's Day, being there the 11th through the 15th. And I'll be there with Will Durst. So I'm actually really excited. I remember just watching him on TV, you know, when I was just starting to get into comedy. And now this is the first time I've gotten to work with him.
That's amazing. I worked with him maybe 15 or so years ago at the Zanies in Vernon Hills, which I think that club is closed now. He's a very funny guy. Also, I forgot to mention, I will be... headlining the Throckmorton Theater in Mill Valley February 24th, and then doing some Air Force bases throughout the U.S. The 26th through the 28th of February. So if you're at an Air Force base, I think in either Oklahoma or Texas or something like that, I'm doing some bases.
Oh, there's one thing I forgot to mention, too. I'm actually doing a panel on podcasting on February 19th in Santa Monica at a place called General Assembly. It's going to be really, really good. It's got a lot of really great people, some people from Earwolf and all different tech podcasts. And we're going to be talking about everything from podcasting to if you're a startup company, do you need a podcast, and all the ins and outs of how you would use one. So that's at General Assembly in Santa Monica, and it is actually free.
Oh, cool.
So check that out.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure we won't be in the same place, but we both are going to be live tweeting the Oscars.
Yes.
We will do an Oscar wrap-up show the week after. And we've got a bunch of new products coming in, so we need to make room. So the CFN Hit Clown shirts and the Hello Junkie shirts, we have slashed their prices by about 30-40%.
They are on sale, yeah. And they're limited edition. We're not printing any more of these. Yep. So when they're gone, they're gone.
So come and buy these up, guys. If you go into the comedyfilmnerds.com, into the store, you'll just see it. There's a tab that says on sale items. Mm-hmm. Click on that. You'll see these two shirts come up. We have them in a bunch of different sizes. And literally, like, if there's four mediums left, that's it. So great way to support the store and get something cool that's at a pretty reasonable price,
and to clear out some inventory in the garage.
We need a little more room in the garage, and this is cool stuff, and you know, it's limited edition, so no one will get these ever again. So that is our program. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, we really appreciate the support you guys have given us over the years. It means the world to us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, and you know, we love the feedback on the spoiler apps. Like all the American Sniper feedback has been great.
It's been great. Yeah,
it's been really great.
And so, we're still working on getting the message boards fixed so new people can register. We got a lot of problems with the site right now, but we're working on all of them. And they're all WordPress related. Isn't that interesting?
All right.
So we're working on it.
We're gonna get this shit fixed.
Yeah.
All right, guys. My name is Graham Elwood,
and I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Benbow Cumberbow.
Hashtag damn work it.